Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus. The last section that we looked at in Mark chapter 9, beginning at about verse 30, again picks up the theme of being silent or not disclosing the Messiah for who he is. They went out, they began to go through Galilee, and he was unwilling for anyone to know about it because he was teaching the disciples, telling them about his death and resurrection. So he wants to make sure they've got solid footing before they go and disclose things or make him into something that he's not. When people talk about Messiah, what will the Messiah be? What will he do? To this day, Jewish people are confused. What will he be? He'll be a human. What will he do? He'll bring peace on the earth. You ask most who have any awareness of what a Messiah is or does, that's what they'll say. And yet how he will accomplish that, that's unknown. Yeshua wants to make sure that while there's a big buzz about him going on throughout his home region of the Galilee, that they get it right and they don't get it wrong. What did he come to do? To have everyone write a Sefer Torah and give a dollar or a shekel or a denarius once every lifetime so that a Sefer Torah can be written, so that the scriptures can be sent out around the globe? No. The Messiah, did he come to heal and teach? Yes, absolutely. Was that his final purpose? No. So Yeshua clarifies it, that his real purpose in coming is to die for us and to rise from the dead. Now that, to us who are on this side of the resurrection, makes perfect sense. But look at the response in verse 32 of the disciples. Twofold. Number one, ignorance. And number two, fear. Embarrassment. Why not ask him? He's your teacher, after all. If you don't understand what the teacher's saying, you put up your hand, you say, "Excuse me, professor, you just told me some chemical formula. I just didn't get that SO4 written down. What happened to the hydrogen?" I mean, if you don't know something and your teacher is there and you're his student, you put up your hand, you say, "I'm sorry, X squared plus what? Equals 4? I missed the curve on the parabola." So, I mean, this is how you do it. Well, why didn't they ask? Look what had just happened. He had just healed that little boy who'd been tossed in the fire and no one could cast the demon out of him. And listen to what he said when he came down from the mountain of transfiguration. Verse 19. Ugh. Ugh. You hear the exasperation. Unbelieving generation, how long will I be with you? How long will I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. So it may be understandable that the disciples were a little reluctant to say, "Excuse me, I didn't get that." He'd probably say, "What? How do you not get this? We've already gone through this with the 5,000 people, with the 4,000 people. We've already done this with the walking on the water. Do you not get this yet? I've already taught you about the parables. You don't get this yet?" That's what they were afraid of. My guess is, if they would have asked him, he would have simply explained it to them. They didn't understand, and because of their fear, they still maintained their ignorance. God wants to give us information about himself, and all we have to do is put up our hand. And that's a willingness to admit that we don't know. That's fair enough. Everybody else on the planet knows we don't know. When will we fess up and say we don't know? And if we don't know, who better to ask but the one who has all the information? So now Yeshua says, "Okay, I don't want anybody out there to know what the wrong purpose is for my coming. So tell you what, fellas, be quiet. Don't talk about this." So they get, verse 33, into Capernaum. He's in the house. And he says, "By the way, boys, what were you talking about when you were walking here?" And they were silent again. Wrong time to be silent again. When God asks you a question, speak. You don't get silent. You don't say, "Maybe I can hide it." You know, like when the teacher at school asked you a question and you just clammed. clamming up doesn't communicate anything except that you think you're more important than what your teacher just requested. Bill, were you writing a note to Joanne? And Bill just sits there quietly. Well, he's saying, teacher, I don't care what you ask. I'm more important. I'm more relevant. I'll answer when I want to answer. That's not a time to be silent. It's the time to communicate. So again, the disciples were silent because with each other they'd been talking about who's going to be the greatest. In other words, they were caught out. You remember Adam and Eve when they were caught out? And God said, where's that woman? What's been happening? You know, did you eat from the tree? That's not the time to say, what tree, sir? That's the time to say, yep, I ate. That's right. That's all God wanted, confession. So what does he want out of these people? Just say what you were saying. Sitting down, he called the 12, said, verse 35, if you want to be first, which he never knocks back, does he? He should be the last of all and the servant of all. And let me tell you, I'm going to model this for you right in front of you. He takes a child, which you got to wonder, where was this kid? And who was this kid? Well, he's in the house. He's in a house, an indiscriminate house. He's with the disciples, but there's probably several other people there. There's a family there. It may be none of their houses. He sets the child right in front of them, takes the child in his arms and says to the boys, you want to receive one child like this in my name? If you do that, you receive me. If you receive me, life is good. In other words, whoever receives me does not receive me, but him who sent me. If you welcome this child, it's as if you're welcoming me. And if you welcome this child, it's as if you're welcoming the Father who sent me. So take care of kids. Humbly serve. That's what he's saying. Don't worry about who's going to have a right-hand position in heaven next to me when we set things up there, or when I come back from heaven into Jerusalem and set things up there. Don't worry about positioning, except the position of humility. Dive for the bottom. Serve people. And what better to represent that than a small child? So then John says, hey, boss, and that's what teacher is here. We saw someone casting out demons in your name. We tried to stop them because he wasn't with us. He wasn't following us. He's not wearing our green and red stripes. He's not wearing our blue and yellow angled stripes. He doesn't wear his hair the same way. He doesn't talk like a Galilean like we do. He may not have even been Jewish. He may have never heard you give that Sermon on the Mount, Yeshua. So don't worry about it, though. We've taken care of him. We've prevented him. The very thing Yeshua is trying to overcome in the welcoming of this child, in the welcoming of that child who was demon-possessed, now he wants to teach about those who aren't wearing the same school or team colors. And Yeshua says, that's not it, boys. Don't hinder him. Don't stop this guy. There's no one who will perform a miracle in my name and afterwards can speak evil about me. Whoever's not against us is for us. Don't knock them back if they're just learning this new faith and they have a religious expression that's a little variant than yours. As long as they're doing it in the name of Yeshua, for the purpose of Yeshua, for the edification of and the glorification of the name of Messiah, don't knock them back. Yeah, but they're really into the law. They're Torah observant. Look, are they observing Yeshua and celebrating him? And let them keep kosher. Yeah, but they're not keeping kosher. This group doesn't keep kosher, and they have cakes made from non-kosher places. And they mix milk and meat, and they mix wool and linen, and they don't wash their hands before they eat. Ah, this is terrible. Master, don't worry, we'll keep them away from us because we're clean and holy and Puritan. And Yeshua would say, are they doing things to honor Yeshua? Are they doing things to lift up my name? If so, stop preventing them. They don't look like you, sound like you, act like you, dress like you, talk like you. But they are on my side. Wow, what a healthy education about the unity of the body of Messiah. We look today, and it's a little confusing for people who are not yet believers, isn't it? Which Jesus should I join? The Presbyterian Jesus, the Baptist Jesus, the Catholic Jesus, the Orthodox, the non-denominational, denominational, Hillsong Jesus? You know, there's so many. When you're an outsider looking in at the religions of Christianity, how do you choose? Well, at the end of the day, aren't we all just about the same?
Yeah.
And don't we all basically believe very similar things? I think so. The point is, all right, so they meet on Sunday instead of Saturday. All right. They read right to left instead of left to right. Don't worry about that. That's not the most important thing. If they're lifting up the name of Yeshua, they're doing it in my name, they won't speak evil of me. And whoever, verse 40, is not against us is for us. There's an alternate version that says whoever is for us is not against us. I like both of those. Then he switches to even welcoming cups of water. And look at the people who are helping you while you're itinerating and wandering and mendicants. Whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because of your name as followers of Messiah. In other words, because you've got the label messianic. I say to you, that guy will not lose his reward. They are giving it as if they're giving it to me, Yeshua would say. So when this undefined Menachem out there gives Peter or James a cup of water, he's really giving it to Yeshua, and Menachem will get blessed. He won't lose his reward. Then he switches imageries and says, by the way, this little one that's still standing here, if you cause him to stumble, he's just extending the borders of what the family of God is. People who give you cold water, people who do miracles in my name, little children. And if you mess up one of these kids, it'd be better if we put a big giant boulder around your neck and threw you into the sea. In fact, while I'm on this, he says, it's better to chop off one of your hands than to go to hell because of what your hands do. In fact, if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. You can get around with one foot. It's better to go into heaven lame than having 2 feet and go on into hell. And if your eyes do the same thing, better to cut out one of your eyes than to go into hell seeing, than to go into heaven with one eye. This is typical exaggerated articulation. This is not Yeshua saying, by the way, if you've ever looked at anything wrong, go gouge your eyes. What he's saying is, in hyperbole, if your eyes are hurting you, causing you to fall and not do something right, then do anything and everything you can to prevent your seeing that thing again. Whatever it is, your hands are not serving, but are serving yourself. Better to cut off your hand. And he's not recommending, he's not handing out knives, he's not handing out swords and saying, here boys, cut them out. In fact, cut them out of each other. What he's saying is, be willing to go to the nth degree to rid yourself of the difficulties of sinfulness. Because, and in context, what's he talking about? He's talking about welcoming the community of faith and disturbing the community of faith by disregard or prevention. So here he's saying, look, if you look at a brother and don't count him a brother, I'd rather you gouge your eye out than cause the kingdom of God to be lessened. But he's not saying go gouge your eyes out. He's putting it in as drastic a label as he can, to help us understand the seriousness of the charge and the seriousness of the welcome that we ought to give one another. This verse, number 48, is put in 44 and 46 in newer versions, but it wasn't originally there. At least no one can find it in the original text. 48, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. That's a description of hell. And Yeshua certainly said it. And it makes sense that they insert it as verse 44 and verse 46, because he would repeat things like that. He would repeat things like that. He would repeat things like that regularly, in almost a musical style, where a chorus comes out at the end of a phrase or two. So here the chorus, assume the chorus, verse 48, about the description of hell is that it's unquenchable fire, and it is worms that don't die. Annoyances, pains, problems, darkness, heat. Not the kind of place that we would go to on a holiday over Christmas. He's putting it in as drastic a condition as he can to say, look, that's what hell is like. And again, we don't really know that that's an exhaustive description of hell. But Yeshua, by the way, is the one who in the Bible spoke more about hell than anybody else. Yeah, that you read, you look up hell in the Bible and see who said it. Not the Apostle Paul, it's not James, it's not King David, it's Yeshua who spoke more about it. The God of love who spoke more about hell. But he's trying to get us on the right page with him and with one another so that we don't go there. Verse 49 and 50 ends, everyone will be salted with fire. Salt's good, but if the salt becomes unsalty, with what will you make it salty again? Have good salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. Again, the charge to welcome little ones, to welcome those who are disturbing the peace and not following along. You're so busy arguing amongst yourselves about who's the greatest that you missed out on welcoming other people who are in the community of faith, who are following me from a different angle or from a different distance, whether they're casting out demons in my name or doing miracles in my name. Yeshua would say, look, let that person be the last of all, the servant of all. Let him serve. And you should not be afraid to ask. Not be afraid to so much that you're silent. But speak when you need to. Be silent when you need to. Most of all, when Yeshua leads the way, you just follow him and welcome those others who are following from other angles. Does that mean that Mormons are our brothers? Does that mean that Jehovah's Witnesses are our brothers? No. The answer is clear, because it's not. They're not doing miracles in the name of Yeshua. They're doing it in the name of their religion, and they're doing things that are seriously opposed to the New Testament church and to the Older Testament community of faith. They're not at all consistent with this biblical data. But somebody at the Prezi Church or the Brethren Church, even an exclusive Brethren Church, might be our brother, you know. So you just got to be wider than you think. And don't argue about who's the greatest, because we know who's the greatest. And it wasn't Muhammad Ali. The greatest is Yeshua. And as long as we have him in focus, then everybody else who's going towards him and we are getting closer together. Here's an old maths picture. I take a cone, an ice cream cone, one of those round at the bottom, skinny and pointed at the top. And you start at one end of a circle, and your mate's on the other end of the circle, diametrically opposed. And as long as you are pointed up in the cone towards the point, then you are actually both getting closer to the cone, the king up there at the top. And physically, you're getting more approximate to one another. You're actually getting closer together as you get closer towards God. And I think that's what God wants from us, is a recognition of the rest of the body of Messiah. You don't even have to be Jewish. Gentiles can get on with it. You can be Pentecostal. You can be anti-Pentecostal, which doesn't make any sense in light of what I'm just saying. But these are my brothers and sisters. And there are Calvinists and Armenians who are going to heaven. Different section. No, they're going to celebrate Yeshua. And as long as we recognize one another, this is the great thing about the unity of the body of Messiah, then we'll be getting better. At least that's the way I see it. So you can't just say the denomination, can you? Methodists, Baptists. There are some Methodists who will go to heaven. There are some Methodists who won't go to heaven. I remember this pastor in Dallas, Texas, and I asked him what the distinctives of his church were in the pre-service conversation. And he said, well, everybody here is a Baptist. Some of them are Christians. Now, when he said that, I could appreciate it. In other words, Baptist is the culture, Baptist is the denomination that those folks in that section of Texas all belonged to and felt comfortable in. But that didn't mean that they were born again to a living hope and that they were following the same Yeshua we do. What that meant is they were baptized, or they attended the church, or were holding their membership there even though they didn't attend. But you get a wide sector of possibilities. So the denomination doesn't say yes or no. It is individuals who are walking closer towards the top of the cone, getting closer towards Yeshua. And those are the folks we're getting closer to.
You've been listening to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus in Australia. For more information, contact us at Jews for Jesus, Post Office Box 925, Sydney, Australia, 2001. God bless you.